Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It's the old guys. You know, what can you do? Alan, Ira, and Rex here. Alan Shartok is back, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Professor. Back from Greece.
Back from Greece. It's
yeah.
A wonderful thing, absolutely.
It was a great time, and I want to go back right now.
Out of the grease and into the fire.
Is that with John Travolta, that version?
Or? No. This is, you know, one of the great, the birthplace of democracy and all. And when you travel with my wife, you
learn about it all.
You go to see all those sites.
It's a great thing. The Professor's Shartok. Ira Fussfeld, a longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
So Greece is the word.
It is. It is. We will do that to some wheels here, we hope. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany. We welcome all of you, even those of you who are on some of our newer signals. Where were we first?
We were in Charleston, Illinois last week.
Yeah. That's a very good thing.
Out in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, yep, right.
Amazing.
It's a wonderful thing. We were grateful for each of you and so on. So we probably ought to start off talking a little bit, since everybody talks about Obamacare these days, we should talk a little bit about the coverage of it and whether there has been ample opportunity for us to, in fact, debunk some of the coverage that may or may not have been totally fair.
The first thing I was struck by, Rex, was your use of the word Obamacare. Now, you know, at the beginning, it was pretty well decided that Obamacare was a bad word, invented by the Republicans to embarrass the president. But then you began to hear everybody using it.
So. And himself. To embrace it. During the campaign, he said, I do care. And he liked that idea.
Yeah.
He said
decided. You know, if you can't lick them, join them.
Right. And now not so much, perhaps.
Maybe. I think he embraced it, I think, as a strategy to sort of make the word non-corruptible. But I think he also embraced it because he felt he had this great institution that he wanted his name connected with. Now I'm not so sure he feels that way.
Did you see one of the late night shows? I can't recall which one.
The answer is no, because I've never been up at past
Well, this is true. Absolutely.
Yeah, I have three initials for you, DVR.
DVR, I know.
It's a modern convenience,
that takes
you know.
Energy, yeah.
It's called time shifting in the business. And actually, more than half of television is now viewed by time shifting.
That's
so
amazing.
Watching it on schedule is the old way, Alan.
That's who I am. Oh, and I thank you for your shot of ageism that you have now taken. No. But you don't worry, Rex. You'll be there soon enough.
I hope so. But there was a program that went to Man on the Street and did a little interview. Do you think more about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? Which do you prefer? Well, of course, they are one and the same. One is the formal name of the legislation. One is what people call it.
And no idea, right?
People kept saying, oh, I believe the Affordable Care Act is the way to go. You know, I support the Affordable Care Act. Well, I thought, well, you know, because it's
affordable.
Affordable, yeah.
I get it.
And I think that is part of the problem in trying to do journalism about such a complex topic as this, that you just end up either reinforcing the point of view that people already have, or you do a superficial job of critiquing because folks just really can't wade through the complexity.
Rexy, you have made a profound point. No, you really have. You're absolutely right. I mean, most people don't know nothing about nothing. And therefore, if you get out in the street and you ask the first 100 people, who's the vice president of the United States? You're lucky if you get 25%. So that means that reporters and writers have to, you know, somehow figure all of this into the way in which they cover the news.
And when you have often criticized Rex and I for help being part of the dumbing down of America, and you've suggested in the past that it's publications like ours that are doing it, but is it a chicken and egg thing? Are the people are already dumbed down and we're only catering to them?
Sir, I fear you put words into my mouth.
Aha!
You know, I have nothing but respect for either of you august gentlemen. But, you know, I think you have a very rough job, and I think you both have done a wonderful job with your products.
You're the one.
So the... Very nice. So, you know, it's not so long ago that mainstream news organizations refrained from criticizing each other.
Except here.
Except here. That's such a good topic. Let's take it.
And now you see folks taking shots, in effect, at each other, pointing out where folks such as Eric Wemple, where's he, in the Washington Post, writing about how the media have failed to cover the rollout of this act appropriately. But, you know, it really is different now that there are websites that are specifically dedicated to media critique. That means that the mainstream media have to get into the act.
I don't know. Sometimes I think some of these guys are just plain lazy. And they begin to eat their own because they have to come up with a column every week. They don't know what to write on.
I'm sure you don't know anything about that.
You know I do. I mean, I understand that every week you got to have a column or two columns or three columns, depending on who you are. And pretty soon they begin to eat their own.
But let's talk about where this emanates from. In light specifically of Obamacare, there are a number of stories out there about people who are having horror stories as a result of individual consumers.
No, what I read, it's true.
Not necessarily. Now, stories are being written quoting the people who are claiming to have had horror stories, and now other journalists are doing some investigations following up those stories and finding it's not quite the same. So the point as it relates to the media is, in the past, it was probably more likely than not that you would not see another journalist dig into the story of a third journalist and find fault with it and write about it. There was sort of an agreement for hands off. Now there is not that.
Well, it depends on the quality of the journal. I mean, for example, the New York POST, a paper whose name I will never pronounce, you know, fully because it's so despicable. They have been attacking the New York Times for years. They have whole sets of journalists who do nothing but do that. And so, you know, you can pick it or choose it. But Ira, I want to ask you a question. In the end, come on now, Ira. I'm a big Obama fan. I think guy's terrific. But this has been screwed up. This has really been screwed up. So you can start to talk about, you know, somebody did something wrong or somebody took some horror story that was. But if you take the aggregate, this has been messed up. And frankly, I can't figure out why. I mean, we're putting nuclear facilities all around the country. We got bombs ready to go off, missiles ready to fly into the air. Does this give you a good feeling about our hold on our computers and the way in which we do business?
Aha.
But the public perception of the level of which this has been screwed up, and there's no arguing that it's been screwed up, but I believe that it has been viewed as even more screwed up than perhaps it is, based on stories that are interviewing individual people who have individual issues that may or may not have been expected and may not have been exaggerated. And so these other journalists are looking into those stories, not necessarily to defend Obamacare, but to try to set the record straight.
That is, anecdotal journalism can only go so far. Right. Eventually, you have to get into the numbers, into substantive.
But the
stuff.
Numbers aren't good.
They also aren't good. That's true.
And there's something else to what Alan just spoke about. You're right. The New York Post has often gone after the Times and the Daily News as well. As we've often said on this program, the Post has been an exception to the rule. However, alternative weeklies have always gone after the local daily. That's not new.
Sure.
I think what
you
is
that in Kingston, didn't you?
Still do. I think what is happening here is to use the famous philosophers, the Three Stooges. Line, all for one for all, and every man for himself, is that there is so much media out there, and the media individually are having their own issues, and we all have credibility problems, that I think that there are other media institutions want to make sure that they're setting the record straight for their own benefit. They don't want to be lumped into the big pile.
Yeah, I don't care what they want. They can't have it. But I do think that journalism on the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act has really messed up. For example, there is something that I find extraordinary, and that is that there are 43 or something like that million people who are being put onto the rolls. I know why, I suspect why the Republicans don't like Obamacare, because this is enfranchising and getting everybody onto some health care. Neither the Republicans or the Democrats are mentioning those 40 million people. I mean, this is death. This is political death. The middle class doesn't want to be supporting it, therefore the Democrats don't like it. And I think it's a big story, but we're not hearing it.
We don't hear, in other words, about the real goal of it, which is to provide health care to people who don't have it.
I think that was Obama's goal. I think it's the thing that will either pass or fail, and in the end will make Obama into historically a great president.
Yeah, and why is it? Well, the narrative, it's Obamacare's, the administration of Obamacare's own fault, because that story was shelved initially because of the problem with the website, and then with the what I unfortunately have to call a lie, which was Obama's promise that you wouldn't lose your health care if you wanted to keep your health care. Those stories have taken all the momentum away from other journalists who might want to say, yeah, just as you say, this is why we need Obamacare. All these people in the country need health care.
Ira, you don't think Obama's a purposeful liar.
I'm afraid on this air, I actually said that last week, and I very rarely use that.
Well, I was in Greece, so I didn't hear it, and I'm glad. But you mean to say you think that Obama is foolish enough to tell a lie knowing it's a lie?
You know, as I said, I didn't say it on this program. I said it on the roundtable. I don't know of any other answer or any other way to describe it except to describe it as a lie, because he said what he said without equivocation,
well,
without an asterisk.
Ira, I want to take great exception to
you. This is not media.
I want to take great exception to you and tell you that if you keep this stuff up,
yes,
I'm going to meet you on the Weehawken plane.
There they go.
In New Jersey.
Off to New Jersey.
But I have no doubt in my mind that Obama, being a brilliant man, was told by some jackass on the staff who said, okay, boss, you can say this with all kinds of comfort. I don't think he was
a liar. In that case, and I'm not usually one who will parse somebody's apology and say he didn't apologize good enough for me, he did not make that clear in his apology for misleading the public.
Ah, an opportunity to segue to the next topic at hand, folks. By the way, though, if you're interested in talking on this topic or others, we are media@wamc.org. You can always email us, media@wamc.org. Rex Smith, Ira Fussfeld, and Alan Shartok here for you from Northeast Public Radio. So about apologies, CBS News, of course, apologized, as we know, for the gaffe on 60 Minutes, in which they, I guess gaffe might be an understatement of what happened. They took a single source who put forward the proposition of what was going on in Benghazi, the terrible night that the American ambassador was killed, and found out subsequently that he, in fact, was not there. The eyewitness account that they trusted, that presented a view of events, was, in fact, given to them by a guy whom they protected by giving him a fake name and who lied to them about whether he had been there.
This is a great story. I'll tell you why, for the Media Project.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have never read such excoriation as the New York Times leveled at CBS in their journalism and in their prose. And what was the name of that lady? Judith Miller? Was that her name at the New York Times, who was just taking the handouts from the Defense Department?
Well, let's say that her sources were the same as the Bush administration's intelligence sources. You're going back to the pre-Iraq war days, and that she was perhaps viewed as insufficiently questioning of those sources, and that because the Times is such a standard setter on national security coverage, the thought is that the Times therefore
took a poll.
Helped us move into the war zone. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, for them to write very critical journalism.
So here's a case where CBS apologized for putting
twice
and on the air at the end of the broadcast. They did it fairly quickly by their measurement, because it was only, I think, 2 weeks after the original report aired. And many people, politically motivated mostly, although some in journalism circles, believed that the apology wasn't enough.
Well, it's never going to be enough. Well, you know that. I mean, if you want to make some political hay.
Did you think it was enough, this one?
Yeah, sure.
The flaw in it, I think, is that nobody really explained what went wrong. Why did CBS accept this one person? And I think if you're
going
greedy.
To...
Because they were greedy.
They were greedy.
Well,
they wanted
a story, but there are standards in place for this kind of thing at a national network CBS, even at a regional outfit like ourselves. You need to have a way that you verify whether this source is really true, especially if you're going with one big source. Now, we went with this story over the past week having to do with the coming of new technology in Saratoga County. That is, who is going to be building computer chips at the big chip fabrication plant up in Luther Forest, what's known as Fab 8, Global Foundries. We
twice
have had big stories that are attributed to a single source. I know who that source is, and I know that and we would not publish that story if I didn't have confidence that that single source is the person we need to have to be true. And I think I've told the story here before of being nailed by a single source when I was a reporter here in the state capitol, and the big issue that I was trying to cover was whether Governor Mario Cuomo would shut down the Shoreham nuclear plant on Long Island. I was a reporter for Newsday on Long Island. This was the big issue confronting us. I had followed him everywhere. I upgraded my plane ticket to first class to be able to sit next to him to try to grill him on this issue. For months I was following it. And one Sunday morning, suddenly in the front page of the New York Times, here was a story saying Cuomo was going to switch his position and he was going to back shutting down the Shoreham plant. And it was not attributed. It did not say how the Times knew this to be true.
Well, we know how the Times knew it, right?
Absolutely.
He gave it to him.
The only way the Times would have allowed that to happen was if the editor was assured that it was the governor himself saying this.
Sure. And he was saying, I don't want to waste my time on the Albany Times-Union. I want it in the New York Times.
It was Newsday at that time,
but you're right.
Same difference. And the point about this CBS thing is that CBS did not explain to us why they went forward with that single source. They didn't give us the reason behind their flawed standards here. So I think it's an inadequate apology, yes.
Oh, but I wanted to ask you something, because I want to return and tie it all up into a nice package, this business of one news source going after another. Didn't the New York Times, is my memory faulty here? Isn't it true that the New York Times and CBS used to cooperate on things like polling and things of that kind?
Yeah, yep. New York Times CBS News poll. That's true. I'm not sure. I don't think they still do, but there's been a lot of that.
No, I don't. I don't think
they do. But I don't think that that affects their journalism. I don't think that would change the way that a reporter would cover something. That's a collaboration structured through some sort of a corporate agreement, and I can't imagine that it would change how they would view coverage of something like
this.
You
know what I love about you, Rex, more than anything else? In the end, you can always be counted on to defend the institution.
To believe in the integrity of the players.
And I think the word comes down, you know, these are collaborators, these are people who we work with. It becomes a matter of tone, it becomes a matter of placement, it becomes the rest of it. That's the difference between you and I, sir.
Here's the thing that's surprising about the CBS error. First of all, let's acknowledge, I think we'll all agree that in 45 years, 60 Minutes has generally produced exemplary journalism. It has made precious few mistakes, and supposedly was working for about a year on this story. And what proved to be their fatal flaw was not checking an FBI testimony that the same guy they interviewed gave that was different from what they had on their air. And they were able to check that testimony after the fact. It seems shocking in retrospect that this was not checked beforehand. It just seems such a basic error. I don't know how that could have been made.
Gentlemen, does it ever occur to you to have this filter like a scroll at the bottom of the television screen? There, but for the grace of God.
Yes.
Now, you talk about media criticizing other media. Yeah. Here's the latest example, you'll excuse the phrase, of driving over your mother-in-law driving over the cliff in your brand new Cadillac. The New York Post did not blast CBS's mistake, as you might have expected to have heard it blasted in the New York Post. I think because the original story that was flawed was, shall we say, a right-wing point of view regarding Benghazi.
In other words, the guy, the source, was a right-wing source.
It underscored the Post and the conservative view of Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
And now we find that they made a mistake. So on the one hand, they must be dying to ridicule CBS for making the mistake. On the other hand, they like the original story better than the correct story.
Which is amusing that members of Congress, who immediately after the original 60 Minutes thing were calling for a hearing based upon what he had said, continue to want to have the hearing.
Oh, sure, like Lindsey Graham, who was going to block all of the appointments as a result of the story, and then afterwards he's still going to do it.
Right. And also because he has a primary, you might believe. So he has to worry about that.
So do you think that Lara Logan, who is a chief correspondent, should be fired?
Absolutely not, especially given the way that network correspondents operate. The term is she fronted the story.
Yeah,
she's got a producer.
There are producers. They're probably on a story like that. There are probably five key people working on it, as well as support staff. But there's the executive producer of the show, the correspondent, the producer of the thing.
But unfortunately for her, she is literally the face of the story. I mean, when Dan Rather had his issues on 60 Minute 2 with the incorrect story about Bush and his grades, I guess that's what it was.
It was the faked documents.
The fake documents, yes.
Right.
And that may have been the last straw for CBS.
I think that's exactly
Rather.
Right. It was the last straw, yeah. Whereas Laura
Logan
is...
that's right. He had one foot out over the cliff.
Yeah, exactly. And they were eager enough to get rid of him, and that gave them an excuse. And I think he... recognizing that has then had a thing about CBS News.
So to the extent that the public connects Lara Logan incorrectly for this report, it may damage her credibility going forward.
Nah, come on. You know, people have a memory of a gnat. You know, they'll remember it for about
And she's not as much a target as Rather was. It isn't as though this was identified as her thing. Rather, remember there were bumper stickers that used to say CBS News Rather biased.
Well, that started way back when he got into a debate with Nixon at a press conference, you know,
as long as we're talking about Rather, we should probably mention again, help me with this, that he sued CBS.
Yes.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know how that ever
did
came
not
out.
Work out.
No, he lost.
Right. And so significantly, on the 50th anniversary of John Kennedy's death, Dan Rather, whose coverage on CBS could be identified as part of his experience, will not be on CBS News. He will actually be appearing on NBC talking about the Kennedy
legacy.
Well,
it's fascinating because, Rather, if I remember this correctly, wasn't very nice about Walter Cronkite. When Cronkite was out of there, and then there was sort of a de-Cronkitization of CBS at that moment.
Yeah. Finally, the New York State Court of Appeals is taking up the case of a Fox News reporter, Jenna Winter. You've probably heard something about this or you've read about it in one of our news organization's publications, but she had reported about the Aurora, Colorado shooter. She had a source in Colorado who told her that there was a notebook that the shooter, James Holmes, had given to his shrink or to a psychiatrist who worked for a university, and that notebook had sketched out the eventual shooting. She reported this on Fox News, and of course his defense lawyers now want to find out, how did she know that? Who leaked that to her? She's citing the Shield Law in New York State, where she is based, to try to prevent her from having to go out to Colorado to testify about this.
And so the question for the court is, should she go out to Colorado?
Right. Should the New York State Shield Law protect her from having to show up in Colorado?
What do you think, Rex?
Well, I of course think it should, but I think what more significantly, this underscores the need for a federal Shield Law, which has passed through the Senate Judiciary Committee, sponsored by Chuck Schumer of New York, which should be a part of the panoply that journalists have to protect themselves from overreaching in an effort to stifle significant journalism.
Well, I hear you, Rex. And again, you're defending the institution, and I appreciate that very much on behalf of all of us.
I like to say I'm defending the First Amendment.
I want to thank you, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the other hand, let's assume for a second that you happen to be the defendant in a case like this, and you want a fair trial. And that the prosecutors, I suspect, are being thought of as a potential for having let this information out. Don't you think that the right to a fair trial has some merit also
in addition to
the First Amendment?
And I'm very grateful that we have great legal minds on our high courts to determine when we get these conflicts between the First and Sixth Amendment, and we can let them figure out the details, but I stand with the First. You know?
Well, no, but it's predictable. It's predictable.
Yeah.
And where, by the way, did you get that wonderful sweater? You know, this is a... he's wearing a gray sweater. He is
not obliged to give you the source of that sweater.
He is tall.
This is New York
State.
He's
statesmanlike. He's handsome, and of course, he looks every bit the part of the major editor paper.
You use whatever assets you have, Alan. What can you do?
Well, those assets which have been cruelly denied to me.
You could have a nice sweater,
this is
too,
not
Alan.
Good.
Rich as you are, you could buy a nice sweater like this. You'd be just fine, you know?
Yeah, right.
In any case, finally today, I note the fact that one of the newspapers in our coverage area, that is coverage here of WAMC, the Times-Herald-Record of Middletown, has recently laid off its staff photographers. This is being done in other newspapers around the country, and in fact, visual jobs in newsroom, that is, photographers, artists, and videographers, according to the American Society of News Editors' annual census, have dropped by almost half since 2000.
Which means that either the reporters are going to have to know how to take pictures, or the photographers are going to have to learn how to write.
Both. Well, no, it's actually both and more of the former.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a smaller paper. We had a photography staff of 2.5 at one point. The half was, you know, he only got worked part-time.
His pictures were only in focus.
Yeah, only in focus. But
yeah.
But we're down to one now. We have a very good photographer, and she is doing real journalism beyond photography journalism.
Sure.
But your primary point is the one. Reporters are expected to be carrying video cameras, still cameras, audio equipment. It's the business has changed.
It has. More on that to come on future issues of the Media Project. Issues is not the word we use here. Programs, right?
I don't know what you're
episodes.
Talking about.
All right. On behalf of Alan Shark,
I was already gone.
Fussfeld, I'm Rex Smith. See you next week.
I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.